Hello and welcome to Animal Voices. You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Lauren Corman, here with Lamia, as always, teching for us. And then our guest news person today is Levi Waldron, and he's going to be reading the news that Rob Moore passed on. Rob's at work today and couldn't join us, so thanks very much, Levi, for being in the studio today.
You're welcome, and good morning, everyone.
Yay, Levi!
I'll just give a quick intro to the show, and then we'll go into the news. We're going to be reaching across the ocean to connect with Martin Balak, and for people who are unacquainted with Austrian animal rights, this is going to be the show for you. Martin's really involved in the animal rights movement in Austria, and he's a council member of the Austrian Vegan Society, as well as the president of the Association Against Animal Factories. And he'll say all these terms in German for us, although the interview will be in English. And he's also going to talk to us about some of the new legislation that's come into effect in Austria, as well as the open rescues that have happened there and the organizing that has happened around open rescues as well. So if you're interested in the history of Austrian animal rights and also how people have organized there, definitely stick around for this program. But before we jump into that, we're going to hear some news with Levi Waldron.
All right. Well, we're starting out with a press release from the Ministry of the Attorney General of Ontario. The McGuinty government is making our communities safer and responding to the concerns expressed by thousands of Ontarians by introducing legislation this fall that will ban pit bulls in the province, announced the Attorney General, Michael Bryant. "People want to be protected from the menace of these dangerous dogs," said Bryant. "Some of these dogs are nothing but a loaded weapon waiting to go off, so we are taking action to make our communities safer." Bryant will introduce legislation this fall to amend the Dog Owners Liability Act. The legislation, if passed, would ban pit bulls, it would muzzle existing pit bulls, impose other province-wide restrictions to improve public safety, and allow municipalities to impose appropriate controls. It would also increase fines up to a maximum of $10,000 and allow for jail sentences of up to 6 months for owners of any dangerous dog that bites, attacks, or poses a threat to public safety. If passed, the legislation would allow for a transition period for existing pit bulls, during which time owners would be required to comply with strict new requirements for continued ownership. There is a link on our homepage, www.animalvoices.ca, to get more info and to be put on the email list. And if you've been listening recently, you know we also did a show recently, which may be archived already on the webpage.
Yeah, it's on the webpage. Rob sent me an email saying, you need to cover the pit bull story. It shows you that Animal Voices did nothing to alleviate this problem. And I was saying to him, well, he was joking around a bit, but it is disappointing when people try to raise awareness, and a lot of experts within the field have been saying, you know, they're not getting at the root of the problem by banning the breed. So anyway, I wanted to say valiant effort, though, on behalf of Rob, who organized that show.
Next item from news.com out of Australia. A major U.S. retailer's decision to stop using Australian merino wool because of pressure from an animal rights group has angered state farmers. An international boycott of Australian wool was announced by People for the Ethical Treatments of Animals, PETA. In response, Abercrombie and Fitch, with 749 stores and a turnover of $2 billion per year, said it would not use Australian merino wool in its garments any longer. PETA believes the wool industry uses cruel techniques, including mulesing and live sheep exports, and has targeted at least 20 other U.S. clothing companies that use Australian wool. Mulesing has been carried out on merino sheep since the procedure was developed by John Mules in South Australia in the 1920s. Originally known as the Mules Operation, the procedure was accepted in 1931 because it was far better than the alternative of leaving sheep to be eaten alive by blowflies after the removal of the wool. It is a surgical procedure involving removing the skin around the backside to prevent wool growth and reduce wrinkling of the skin. South Australian Farmers Federation President John Lush said the emotional blackmail and misleading information used by PETA was mischievous and shameful, and that being eaten alive by maggots is much crueler than the alternative of having their backsides clipped and tails docked, said the Federation's livestock section chair, Ben Mumford. And naturally, they've left out at least one alternative, which would be to not subject the sheep to either of those procedures.
Right.
Next item from eMediaWire.com. Select Wisely has expanded its food translation card offerings to address the needs of vegetarians. Visitors to their website, selectwisely.com, can now choose from 13 different languages to create a card specific to their travel plans. In many European countries, meat, chicken, and pork are key ingredients in dishes, though not easy to identify on restaurant menus or at food stands, says Pam Alberg, president of Select Wisely. Our cards provide vegetarians with a simple tool to communicate their dietary preferences. Select Wisely's new multi-language vegetarian cards help travelers communicate to restaurant staff and other food vendors the information necessary to avoid unwanted foods. By visiting the Select Wisely website, customers can create a card specific to their dietary and language requirements. Sounds pretty helpful.
Is that, are you done with the news?
There's one more item. Yes. From the BBC, the Vegetarian Society has been warned its endorsement of McDonald's meat-free foods will upset vegetarians. Corn burgers, fruit toast, and bagels are now on the menu at the fast food chain's UK outlet, marked with the society's approved logo. In response, the Vegan Society has said it believes many vegetarians will be against the move. The Manchester-based Vegetarian Society said the aim of the product approval is to, quote, bring vegetarian into the mainstream. It's when you add approved by to a product, it's like condoning it along with everything else, said Tony Bishop-Weston of the Vegan Society. I think there's going to be a lot of unhappy vegetarians and vegans out there because McDonald's are like the Antichrist to them. However, the fact McDonald's is spending its money promoting vegetarian can't be that bad, he explained. But I doubt very much it'll be vegetarians and vegans that will be going in there. It'll be meat eaters who'll start eating more vegetarian food, he added. The Vegetarian Society said it is an educational charity, not an animal rights pressure group. In a statement, it said, Vegetarian Society-approved products are carefully checked before being licensed. Every single ingredient and process involved in both the factory environment and restaurant kitchen has been carefully scrutinized to ensure UK customers can order a vegetarian meal in McDonald's safe in the knowledge that its ingredients are truly free from slaughter products. And Andrew Butler from People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals said it approves of fast food endorsement, having backed BK Veggie, a vegan burger in Burger King's U.S. outlets. What do you think, Lauren?
Don't ask a tired person this question. No, I was thinking it was interesting, considering the show we did last week on freeganism with Adam Weissman, and yeah, it's just so interesting. You know, you think it's not a cruelty-free product necessarily when you're supporting a fast food industry, specifically McDonald's. So I just think, I don't know. I mean, like so many of those things, I guess it's sort of a step in the right direction, but at the same time, you got to wonder what it reinforces and endorses through the practice, which I guess are some of the critiques that were already brought up in that article. What do you think? I can't see you eating at McDonald's, Levi.
No, well, it's been a very long time since I ate at McDonald's, and I probably still won't even when they have their Vegetarian Society-endorsed burger, but I think I'm still glad they're doing it.
Yeah.
And that they're not sneaking meat into their veggie burger.
Right. What about you, Lamo? What do you think?
I think, in my opinionated opinion, I think it's a pile of crap.
Mm-hmm. Tell us more.
Were you asking me that because you thought I would think that?
Well, I wanted to get a diversity.
No, I do. I'm like, McDonald's? No. I want to spend time annihilating McDonald's. I don't want to spend time approving veggie burgers by McDonald's, by the Manchester Veggie Society. Honestly, I don't think it's a step in the right direction. I don't think it's a way to get meat eaters to eat veggie burgers. They're already at McDonald's. And McDonald's doesn't have any goddamn nutrition in it anyways.
Would you classify McDonald's as the Antichrist? Love you.
I don't know if I use that language, Lord. But I would say it's a member of the Antichrist Society.
Right. Endorsed by the Antichrist Society. Oh, boy. Okay, so Animal Voices. I've got 1 hour sleep, so this is going to be a weird show. I just know it. You're listening to Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5, the University of Toronto Community Radio Station. Please check out our website, the fancy-dancy website that Rob Moore put together for us, www.animalvoices.ca. It's a fun site, and there's little giveaways, and things are updated on a fairly regular basis, so it's an excellent resource as well in terms of show archives. So we're going to take a musical break, and then we're going to come back, hopefully, with Martin Balak, and we're going to find out all about Austrian animal rights. Hello, and welcome back to Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5. Today on Animal Voices, we made contact across the ocean to Dr. Martin Balak, and I'm sure I'm saying his name wrong. He's going to correct me on all my pronunciation or mispronunciation. Today, we're going to be talking with him about Austrian animal rights and some of the different organizations that he's involved with. For example, he's a council member of the Austrian Vegan Society, as well as the president of the Association Against Animal Factories in Austria as well, and I'm sure has been involved with and is currently involved with a bunch of other things, including hosting an animal rights radio program there as well. Thanks for being on the program today.
Hello. Thanks for having me here.
It's so great that we're able to speak with you today live on the air. I wanted to give our listeners an introduction to who you are, and so I'll turn over that task to you. Maybe if you could give us some information about just who you are and your role within the animal rights movement in Austria.
Okay. I studied in Vienna in 1982, and I turned vegetarian then already. Because wherever meeting people who told me about it, I was always interested in the animal issue, but I didn't really make the connection until somebody told me. So I turned vegetarian in 1982, became active in 1985. It was then mainly against vivisection. In 1989, I established a contact to the English animal rights movement, which was very much live, more lively than the Austrian one. And there was actually very little contact to the international movement here in Austria. It's a rather small country, 8 million people, and rather isolated, if you want, at least on the animal rights issue. And in 1989, so I became active in England and turned vegan. And I was a scientist, actually, then. I studied mathematics and physics and worked also on environmental physics at the university. And in 1997, I decided that I need to spend all my time doing animal rights because I felt the issue to be too important. So I dropped out of the academic career, really. Mm. And since then, which is now has been 7 years or 8 years, I've been solely doing animal rights campaigning in Austria. So in 1997, I came back to Austria and started campaigning in earnest here on different issues.
And you said that you were initially involved with looking at issues around vivisection. Can you tell us what sort of got you first into animal rights? Was it seeing a video or going to a protest? What initially introduced you to some of the issues of animal exploitation?
Yeah, it was actually I didn't really see any animal rights activities, or I didn't know that there were groups doing it. I just felt it basically within me that it was wrong how we treated animals in principle. On a very deep level, I felt, for example, that at home the dog just wasn't treated right. Why can't he be treated much more as an equal? And that did disturb me, and I was sort of emotionally moved by the issue, but I didn't really get active. And I turned vegetarian also at a time when I wasn't really active. It was because somebody told me that they were vegetarian, so I did the connection in my head, which wasn't apparent to me, sadly, till then, that there is obviously between animal abuse and eating meat. I also thought eating meat is just necessary. I'd never met anybody who was vegetarian. It didn't occur to me. And I became active as a student then in 1985. I did my first participating campaigning against vivisection at the same university I was studying at. And that was because we were a politically active group in many different respects. It wasn't solely animal rights. And vivisection became part of our campaigning, among other, especially social issues and also environmental issues. We did rather talk of ecological ethics at that time, so it was part of environmental ethics, which did disturb me then already, because I thought animal is more an individual and not a species. But in Austria, it was more an environmental issue. In 1984, we had this 3-month occupation of a primeval forest that was supposed to be cut down and made into a power station. And I participated in this, stayed there for the 3 months, and that was my first sort of activity on the ground, basically. But it wasn't really animal rights. It was connected, though, because obviously creatures need forest to live in. And from that onwards, I started to become more and more, to slip more and more into animal rights. And that the main topic in the 80s in Austria, I think in other countries as well, was actually vivisection, mainly because of the pictures you see, and that shocks people most. I mean, many people then were anti-vivisection, but didn't think of vegetarianism or farmed animals. It was vivisection that was the horrific pictures you saw, and that shocked you, and that made you do something. And so the biggest part of the movement was surely not connecting things to farming animals, but doing vivisection.
I'm always delighted when we get the chance to speak with someone who's been involved with the movement for so long, and somebody who is so dedicated and has managed to, at least on the outside, look like he or she has avoided burnout. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how you've seen the animal rights movement grow or change in Austria. Do you think that the movement is gaining strength now? Does it have a real presence within Austria?
Yeah, totally, totally. I mean, in the 1980s, it was weird. It was more part of other movements. There wasn't a movement itself. It was just politically active people also took on this issue. It wasn't seen in a sort of global picture. There wasn't, we want to liberate animals. It was, there are some issues that need to be changed in society. One is vivisection, the other is how we treat the environment, and so on. So it wasn't really a movement in itself. It was certainly not a social movement, and it didn't have really much, in Austria at least, a philosophical part to it. And it was only in the end of the 80s, in 1988 actually, that the first, that it became more and more an issue in itself. The first Austrian animal rights philosopher published his work in 1988, and there were groups founded that are now the biggest and the most active on the animal rights issue. And the main topic then was fur, because in 1988 we achieved a law on vivisection, which was obviously a very terrible law, because it basically, like everywhere else, I think it just says necessary vivisection has to happen, and that means all vivisection, because the vivisectors themselves say what is necessary and what is not, and none of them will say my work is unnecessary. So obviously it didn't change much, but the focus shifted to fur. And from then, in the beginning of the 90s, to farmed animals. And it was then that actually no restriction was set on fur farming and on farming animals generally. And especially fur farms, you wouldn't even know where they were and how they were keeping the animals. It was just not known, really, neither to us nor to the government, because you didn't have to register if you had a farm. And so our first steps were to actually go around, find those farms, and find out what is actually happening. How many farms are there? What animals do they keep? How do they keep them? And obviously, a movement can only be politically active if you have enough information, enough facts and figures on these issues, because otherwise you can't get a complete picture, and you can't campaign on it. You can't have political demands on government. And the government itself never published any such things. They didn't know, and they probably didn't even want you to know.
Mm-hmm.
And from then onwards, it became bigger and bigger and more of an issue. And in the last years, we had the very big success with the new national animal law.
Mm-hmm.
And this law is actually coming into effect on the 1st January 2005. And we did achieve that law, and I suppose we will be talking about this a bit more in the future. But the most interesting aspect is that It was actually, as it is stated now, it was a law that no party wanted, but we managed to create such a strong political pressure, especially in the elections that were running. There were provincial elections and also a presidential election. We managed to create so much pressure there that on the 27th of May this year, the parliament unanimously, so every single MP, voted in favor of this law. And that clearly shows that now in Austria, animal rights is on the political agenda. It can decide basically how elections go, and the parties have to listen. And each party now has an animal rights spokesperson, which speaks about the party program on animal rights. And this is a giant step from the 80s, where nobody talked about this at all, if at all, then only in connection with environmental.
Martin, our temporary co-host here today, Levi Waldron, had a question for you as well.
I was just wondering what the content of that law is.
Yeah, it's actually very far-reaching, but the primary aspect is we will establish animal rights into the Austrian constitution. So alongside human rights, it will say the state protects the life and well-being of animals as fellows of human beings. And that's alongside human rights. So from now on, in every court case, in every political argument, wherever, you can argue on the basis of this constitutional statement. And I think this is a very strong thing, and I don't know actually any other country that has such a strong statement with respect to animal rights in such a high level. And the second very important aspect is animal solicitors. In 1996, we already started demanding animal solicitors, and because in the law, the problem is that you cannot start litigation on behalf of animals that are being abused. You can only basically just inform police or inform government and say that's what's happening there, but you cannot force them to get active. So we asked for an institution to be established called the animal solicitors, who can start litigation or can start court cases on behalf of animals. And no party really, apart from the Green Party, wanted that, and we managed to get them to unanimously agree to establish this institution, which will start on the 1st of January 2005. We're very hopeful that this will change things, but we obviously don't know. I don't think anywhere in the world there's experience with such an institution. And there will be 9 animal solicitors appointed, each of them for 5 years, and they will be, the governments can't tell them what to do. They are sort of independent, and they can start court cases on behalf of animals. They can intervene in court cases where there's a prosecution of an animal abuser and such like, and we hope that that will change something. So these are the most important things on the side, or on the side if you want, but the third vital achievement is a ban on battery farming. We had a long campaign against battery farming, and they didn't want to stop it because it is a giant industry. There were 7 million hens in battery farms right now. This is two-thirds of the egg production industry in Austria, and this is a very big economical power. And we did a campaign really strongly and pushing for a change there. And they did say, okay, we make the cages a bit bigger, and we didn't agree. And they did say, okay, there must be a nest in the cages, and there must be a scratch floor and not a cage floor. But we didn't agree. And eventually they decided to agree to a ban on cages full stop, and that will come into effect on the 1st of January 2009. So in 4 years' time, the whole industry will actually have to change. And I also think that's really a historic achievement for us here.
Yeah, it's really incredible. We're going to take a short musical break, and then we're going to come back. And I'd love to hear more about how activists were so successful, and some of the strategies that you and the people that you were organizing with, what you used, and how you achieved this historic success within Austrian legislation. So we're going to come back with Dr. Martin Balak. Am I saying your last name right?
Yeah, fine, yeah. Baluch.
Baluch, okay. I knew that I wasn't going to say that correctly. So we're going to come back with you, and before we do that, though, we're going to hear some music by our DJ, Lamia. Hello, and welcome back to Animal Voices. You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM, your University of Toronto community radio station. I'm your host, Lauren Corman, here with Levi Waldron, co-hosting and doing news. And our tech today, as always, is Lamia. Today we are speaking with Dr. Martin Baluch. I'm sure I'm still saying that wrong, but that was my best attempt. And we were speaking before the break about some really exciting new legislation that's coming into effect, though I guess was just passed in Austria, that would include a bill of animal rights alongside a bill for human rights, which is just exceptional that this has happened. So, Martin, I was wondering if you could talk about how some of these successes within the legislation were achieved by animal activists. What did you actually do to create this kind of change?
Yeah, I still don't fully understand. I mean, I have done an analysis of this, and it will be published in this book that is edited by Peter Singer, In Defense of Animals, the new edition in 2005, where I've tried to sort of summarize what we did and how we achieved that. It was a miracle a bit, but it was possibly also made possible through the sort of situation that was set up at then. Mainly we started actually with a battery farming campaign. Battery farms have been portrayed or shown as being animal abuse, especially in schools here, for a very long time. So this is as the common knowledge. It was just impossible to change anything, obviously because of the power of this industry. In 1999, the EC set up new regulations for battery farms in the whole of the EC, which would have to come into effect or came into effect in 2003, 1st of January 2003. And so we decided to use that to show how laws are just not being applied or being really put into practice in Austria. And in March 2003, we started this campaign with visiting 48, the biggest 48 battery farms in Austria within 15 days. So we were four groups doing a number per night, and filmed in there, and made that then public after these 15 days. We also liberated openly and said that it was us, a number of battery hens, especially ill battery hens, that we brought them to doctors and to veterinary first aid. And we could show that basically all, throughout the whole country, all battery farms were not complying to these EC regulations on keeping battery farms. And further than that, there were loads of ill and dead birds there, and there was dirt and unhygienic conditions, and the whole buildings didn't really comply to regulations that were already there before. So we actually could show that the animal protection laws were not applied in Austria. They were not really put into practice. And also, obviously, this EC regulation. But the main point was that there were inspectors, government inspectors. We could show that they came to inspect this battery farm. And this battery farm had 20% too many chickens, which you could easily see because you just look in the cage and you count the chickens. And there were 5 to 6 chickens in cages where only 4 were allowed. And this inspector came for a month, 4 weeks, before we went in there and filmed it. Mm-hmm. And we could show by that these controls were just non-existent. And there were many, many trials came up. We were brought, I personally also was brought to court, obviously for going in there and filming for trespass, and also for taking out chickens to the veterinary. And through these courts, I could make public that these conditions, how terrible they were, and also that the laws were just not being put into practice. And that shook really the industry. And on the basis of that, we could then pressure for saying how these animals are kept is just animal abuse, and the laws aren't being used. And whatever law you do, if these creatures are in the cages, then they will suffer terribly. And there is no control. There's no inspectors that really do something. And that did And we also then ran the campaign on many, many levels. We occupied the headquarters of the Conservative Party because we soon realized that it was the Conservative Party who was actually standing in the way of any change there. And they were in government. And then there were a number of provincial elections, or two provincial elections, and we did campaign there vigorously against the Conservatives, saying they are responsible for animal abuse. And in one of these provinces, they lost 50% of their votes. And in the other one, they lost the provincial governor, the change to the socialists. And so they were obviously very much alarmed. And then we also had during this campaign a very good cooperation with media. We had about a dozen journalists who were very sympathetic, and we managed to get it ever more into the public. And then came the presidential elections, and there was also the main conservative candidate versus the socialist candidate. And we did follow her rallies, and we did make it public, and we also published advertisements in the big daily newspaper signed by 78 prominent Austrian people from arts and science, who also said there must be a battery farm ban. And we actually got her so far that in her last press conference before the election, the conservative candidate said that battery farms must be banned. So we got her so far, and that clearly showed the conservative suddenly said, okay, and then she lost the election. Anyway, she lost the election still. And that was the point where the Conservative Party said, we're just starting to lose elections. This issue is really becoming a political issue that decides elections. We must change something. The opposition was on our side because they saw that was a possibility to get the government to lose elections. And suddenly the government said, okay, we agree with this. And because the government said we agree with this, and because the opposition always publicly voiced their support of our ideas, the floodgates were basically opened. And so we could push through this animal solicitorship and the constitutional thing, because suddenly nobody could oppose us, because nobody wanted to be the one who is actually losing the next elections because they are seen to be anti-animal. And so we used this opportunity that we had built up this pressure against the government where the opposition was on our side, and suddenly the government gave way, and then everybody had to agree with it. And this is why this vote on the 27th of May was unanimous, because everybody had to basically agree. It was such a strong pressure on the parties. And we used this opportunity, as I said, to get a number of additional things through, like the constitutional change and animal solicitors, and a number of other things, actually. I mean, there's a general nationwide fur farm ban, which already started in 1998, but formally it's now everywhere. There is a ban on wild animals in circuses starting from the 1st of January 2005, which was also after a long campaign, but it was in the provinces already, but now it's a national complete ban. There is no wild animals allowed in circuses, full stop, also in circuses visiting Austria. And there is a ban on cats and dogs being sold in shops. And a number of other things, like you're not allowed to kill an animal for no good reason, so the killing in shelters is not allowed. And so there's a number of things coming in the wake of this, but the whole campaign won because of this build-up of an immense pressure on the government due to these election losses that they had. And that might have actually to do with a general change in society, that sort of the government had been long enough in government and changed. But we were such a prominent voice. The media covered us sometimes for weeks on end in headline news.
Wow.
And that really led to the government deciding we have to give way to that, and suddenly we have this law.
Martin, I wish you could see the faces of the people in the studio right now, because we're all sitting here looking very shocked as you rattle off all these various different successes. When you say we pressured the government, or we did this, who specifically are you talking about? How many people were involved in helping to create these change, and which organizations and groups were part of this movement?
When I came back in 1997 from England, I had this sort of 8 years experience with the grassroots movement in England, and in Austria it was still very much a different group sort of working on their own. And my idea, what I sort of imported from England, this experience, was that we have to unify to a movement. And that was a bit of an alien idea here, but I mean, it did work at the end, and ever more people came together. And in 2002, we did our first national animal rights conference here in Vienna, and 400 people turned up, and it led really to a unifying of the movement very strongly. So all, even national organizations, although they're very, very hesitant to cooperate with grassroots people or smaller organizations like our Association Against Animal Factories, but they did still see sort of an advantage in it, and they did come closer. And after this 2002 conference, we had our first national animal rights press conference where all groups came together and did this, and that was really the basis on which this could happen. Because I mean, surely there was, I mean, we were the focal point, that's for sure. Our group and our activists, about 150 activists all across the country that were participating in all these events there. But there were a number of smaller groups, grassroots groups anyway, but the bigger groups did come in supporting it. They did finance, for example, this advert campaign. We did an advertisement campaign. We did these adverts with the 78 prominent signatures. We plastered half the cities during the election campaigns with animal rights anti-conservative slogans, and lots of this funding came from the bigger groups, and the bigger groups had also a bit sort of lobbying contact with the government, and we could sort of radicalize them a bit, and yeah, it was really an activity where everybody came together, and that's sort of the lesson for the future, really, that struggling along alone just doesn't do as much, and not even, you see, five groups struggling alone is not is much less than five groups struggling together, because not even five times as much, but it's just much more, because you just get far more momentum, and you're taking with you lots more people, and you're making far more headline news, and that really makes a difference.
Martin, it sounds like you have very, very organized animal rights groups in Austria, but it sounds like also you had very good support from the general public and the media. And coming from a country where that's not really the case at all, I'm really curious just where that comes from, if that's something that your groups had been developing for decades before, or if it's a part of the culture in Austria. What do you think about that?
No, we actually had a terrible contact to media, the media carried animal rights in absolutely not at all or negatively, just up until a few years ago, and that was to do with lots of infighting here, then with lots of uncoordinated attempts, and just, I mean, the main thing that I think is now different is that we established personal contact. It doesn't have to be in many newspapers. It must be sensible information you have, and you must be a serious person who is really knowing something. They must have this impression, at least. And you must get in contact personally. And that's what I did. I got to know really sort of in different media outlets, I got to know journalists who are sympathetic. They don't have to be animal rights, really. Some of them were eating meat and stuff, but they did see the point we were making. I did meet them personally and speak with them and get them involved. I didn't, for example, say, I mean, here's the stuff, just publish it. I did say, you see, we both want to change the society in this way. We want to get the government to ban battery farming. What do you suggest? How can we get it into your publication, into your whatever TV program? And then they came up with suggestions. They went to their editors-in-chief and they found out what sort of way we could, what do we have to do to get it in? And without them, it just wouldn't have worked, because they came up with ideas, and we did change our strategy all the time, because if you do a demo, you do it three times and then it's no news. If you do an occupation, it's three times no news. But if you do a demo, an occupation, then you do whatever, a press conference, an open rescue, you have to come up constantly with new things, and the sympathetic journalists can use them to make a story out of it. And obviously we did go with journalists into the places, showed it personally to them. That makes a big difference, because if they're impressed by being inside a battery farm and seeing what's happening there, it becomes really a personal thing for them to change this. So we had a core of about a dozen journalists who did help very, very much. And then there were they created also the media interest, really, because if a number of newspapers carried that, the others just can't not. And the biggest newspapers did carry it then ever more and really made it to an issue for themselves. I mean, I don't think that's sort of we found the key, and from now on we will win every animal rights battle. But so maybe it was luck as well. But the key was one important step to achieve this sort of thing is to get personal contact with journalists, find out who's sympathetic and meet them and befriend them and talk with them and get them to be involved, personally involved. So they did come to our conference, to our animal rights conference, and did get involved themselves, that they feel part of the movement, and then they really push the issue in their media groups, and then it can work.
It's really impressive. I hope that some of these tactics, I know that open rescues are starting to happen quite frequently in America, and mm-hmm. and I hope to see them continue. I was wondering if we could just go back briefly to the open rescues. You said that you ended up in court, so I assume that means that you were arrested. What were you charged with, and what happened with that case?
Yeah, we did start also in the beginning of 2002 with this idea of open rescues. We did partly go in with journalists, otherwise we did go ourselves. We rescued pigs and chickens, mostly out of factory farms, and we did make it public afterwards. So I didn't stay there to be arrested. Our strategy was to say what we did was fully legal. We did take these animals and bring them to the vet because they needed veterinary treatment, and the place where they were being kept is illegal. And it is animal abuse, and not just morally, it's really legally illegal, as it's breaking the law, and that's why these animals need veterinary treatment. Hmm. So we then reported them to the courts, but we never said I have done something illegal. So obviously then the courts or some reacted and did, and I had to go to court and defend this. Not in all cases, because many of them thought better not have any media coverage of it, and we just forget it. But when I liberated in the beginning of March 2003 seven chickens from a battery farm, this guy who was actually convicted of animal abuse then through my report of what happened there, he did bring me to court for this, and he said €15, which is about $15 approximately, this is the value which I have basically stolen from him. And I was convicted in the first level, and then I appealed and was convicted again. All the time I said what I did was justified because it was an emergency. There was no easier way, also no other way to save these birds because it was absolutely an emergency. One day longer and they would have died. They were really desperately ill and it was in a legal place. And in the high courts then, and that was another of these amazing victories which came in the wake of this law really, in the high courts in July this year, I was acquitted. And the High Court ruled that I acted in the name of society by liberating these seven chickens out of this battery farm. And that would, and actually, in their verdict, they did refer to the new constitutional sentence, protection of life and well-being of animals, although it's actually not in the law book yet. It comes in the 1st of January. But there was such a mood and such an atmosphere in society where they say the attitude to animals just has changed. They're not things anymore. They are creatures that need to be protected, and if they are in danger, it's okay to break in somewhere and get them out to a vet if that is what is necessary to save them and to save their life. And the high courts, really 2-1, there were three judges, 2-1, I was acquitted with this argument. And actually, I think that's also a very, very positive development that we see that the courts start to agree that factory farms are just such an animal abuse that you can actually break the law in order to save those animals there.
Martin, the work that you've done is an incredible inspiration. I think it's made all of us here pretty giddy. We only have a few more minutes left, and so I wanted to quickly make sure that I thank you not only for being on the program, but also for your amazing efforts within the animal rights movement and for inspiring us here in Canada.
Thanks for inviting me.
Well, it is our pleasure. We only have about 3 minutes left, and I just want to turn it over over to you, the forum over to you, to say whatever you'd like to in the last few minutes about anything concerning Austria and animal rights issues.
I don't know. I mean, we're a small country, and I think changes in a small country are much easier than changes in bigger countries. There are 8 million people here. Most of them, a third of them, is living in Vienna city and surroundings, and it's just easier there to change laws and to get people moving. But that, I hope, from these smaller countries like Switzerland, neighboring country here, which actually banned battery farming in 1991 already, I hope from such smaller units where the changes are easier, we can sort of spread the word and spread the news out and move to bigger countries. Bigger countries are often, the governments are often far more reluctant to change. They feel far easier challenged by social movements. They feel whatever, the society is in danger, the stability of society is in danger. And I think we should tell them that this is not so. There is a smooth, continuous change that you can do, change the laws and change the attitude towards animals that doesn't threaten stability in society, that doesn't threaten the security. I mean, and that sort of must be the message. We must move continuously, not do a revolution like in arms, but a continuous change that doesn't threaten people and that doesn't make them feel wherever the world is breaking down. And here in Austria and in other countries, Switzerland, Sweden, smaller countries, we can see that it does work. We can see that society changes completely, that everything is actually the same as it was, but we do see animals in a different light. We do accept them far more, give them far more value and accept them far more as what they are, so sentient beings that need to be protected and respected. And it's surely still a very long way to establish complete liberation, but I think we can see that it can work. If what happened here now, that we can stop with ethical arguments, such a giant industry like battery farming, which dominated this whole market here and has very strong influence on the government, and if we can stop them with an ethical argument, I mean, what should stop us eventually from achieving animal liberation?
An excellent note to end on. Thank you so much for being again on the program, Martin, and hopefully we'll have you on again sometime soon. It's really fantastic to hear from you and to find out more about the organizing efforts that were so successful in Austria. We've been speaking today with Dr. Martin Balhuk, and he is involved with the animal rights movement in Austria. He is a council member of the Austrian Vegan Society, as well as a host for an animal rights radio program out there, as well as the president of the Association Against Animal Factories. And wow, I just feel stunned by what we've heard today. I hope that you found it inspiring as well. If you have any questions for us, you can write us at animalvoices@ciut.fm. Thanks also to Lamia for being here teching for us, as well as for Levi being with us today and doing the news, and for Rob composing that news for us as well. You're listening to CIUT 89.5.